make it to the top. To the top, not the bottom of the top. Top Talent.
Here we go. This is my podcast. It is Top Talent. This is the podcast that originates from and celebrates upstate New York's capital region. Woohoo! All the talent who lives here, all the talent that might be coming to the area to perform. My name is Richie Phillips, a.k.a. Ryman Richie, a former co-host of a national award-winning, brag, radio show here. I was on the air for 30 years, and I was extremely lucky in that it gave me a chance to show off what I know how to do somehow. I don't know how I know how to do it, but I know how to take a subject and make a stupid song out of it. That's my ability. But everybody's got a talent to do something, and I want to give back. I want to show off your talents. This is a first in the series of what I call Capital Region Road Warriors. These are the musicians who you see in the paper, you see in the listings, in the entertainment listings. They're out on Monday nights, Tuesday nights here, Wednesday nights they're there. They're all over the place. They are road warriors, people who make their living with their guitar, their what the musicians call their axe, in their trunk. And they drive from place to place, and it's a difficult way to make a living. It really is. It's a fun way to make a living. It's a rewarding way to make a living. But don't think it's easy. I did it myself. I did it for many years. And I look back now, and I don't even know how I did it. And there's one gentleman who sings and performs in the Capital Region. He's been doing it probably 35 to 40 years. I'm going to have to find out exactly how many years he's been doing it. He is a legend in the Capital Region and beyond. His name, and you've seen him all over the place, his name is Al Bruno. He is still performing, and I got a chance to talk to him. I've always wanted to have him on the podcast to find out a little bit more about him. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to know more about him. So without further ado, let's go now to the exclusive Top Talent telephone and speak with Al Bruno.
Top Talent!
By the way, what you're going to hear in the very beginning of this is a conversation I was having with him as I was setting everything up to hit the record button. But he started to tell a story about a song that he has just recorded and performed as a test in a local club. And I thought it was a good story, so I kept it in at the beginning. So you're hearing our conversation before the official conversation, if you know what I mean.
All right. Here's your song. Yep. I just want to see if you can hear it.
I've been drunk here before.
Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is working great.
I did that last night at the club, and a girl went live with it.
Yes.
And she was singing every lyric to it. And you know, you couldn't even hear me. I was like, wow, you know, but because I let her have that when I first got the demo on it, you know. So
how did she know the words?
Because when I originally did the demo, and recorded it. Then I started doing it live, a couple of clubs and what have you.
Wow.
And I gave her a copy of it, you know, and she was like, oh my God, I love that. I love that song because it's so real of everybody's life. You know?
Yeah.
You walk into a club and you go, oh my God, I've been drunk here before. That's for sure. And that's why Eddie was inspired to write it for me, you know, and that's what it was, you know? So,
wait a minute. You're talking about Eddie Kilgallen wrote that?
Yes, I am. Yeah. That's the guy who wrote it. Yep.
And, oh, no kidding. It's a great song. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you remember a place that was called The Lookout.
Sure.
Okay. Well, that Eddie used to play there as a single after, you know, he split up from me and the group and all that. And he would do a single there at times. So he spent many nights in that place. And when he came to see me, I was there, but it's a different club, you know, and he was like, oh my God, I've been drunk here before, that's for sure. You know? So that inspired the thought, you know. So,
gotcha.
But, you know, and like you said, I stole as much as I can from you, Bruno, because you're the showman. I do what I do. That's all I can tell you.
Wow.
You know.
Wait a second, Al. Hold on a second. We got a call coming in. Hello?
Wait, are you guys talking about me? Eddie Kay from Nashville?
This is Eddie Kilgallen?
Yeah.
I can't believe this.
I heard, you know, when your name is mentioned, bells ring. Well, this was like a church bell tolling. Somebody was tolling my name, so I thought I'd jump in. How are you doing, brother?
Tolling or trolling?
Let's call it tolling for now.
And I thought I would interrupt to explain that Eddie Kilgallen was a local musician from this area, the upstate New York area. He went to Nashville, became very big, wrote some hits, and now is a member and musical director of the Montgomery Gentry Band. Okay, just thought I'd throw that in there. Back to the interview.
So now, I know we talked a little bit about your connection here, or at least Al did. Keep going. Give me your background with the great Al Bruno.
Wow. Al Bruno is a local legend. He's one of my greatest friends. And I could trace back Al giving me my first real start in the music business back when I was still in high school, Columbia High. I was 17 years old, and through a mutual friend or something, Al got my number and he said he's looking for a keyboard player. And I said, well, I'd like to come audition, but the only problem is y'all have to come pick me up because I don't have a car. I haven't tried yet. So I remember getting to the house and we practiced in a basement and I brought my Fender Rhodes and all my keyboards. And
yes.
I don't know whether they liked my playing or they just didn't want to lift the Rhodes back up the basement stairs. But I got in the band and I would go there for band practice a couple days a week and actually get off the bus from school and have to walk about 2 miles, and did that for a long time. So he gave me my start in the music business.
You sound like the old guy. I used to walk uphill to school with the Fender Rhodes on my back to go to school.
Both ways.
Both ways. That's amazing. Now, it's funny. You and I go back a while because we both played in the same piano bar. And what's so interesting is I can distinctly remember you doing Neil Diamond songs back then. So is that how you connected with him? Because you knew the Neil Diamond catalog so well.
Exactly. I mean, back in the early 80s, Al had a band called the Blue Light Special. Mm-hmm. And we had like a residency at the Silver Spur in Latham. It was 5 nights a week. And back then we would do a dance set, but then we would do a show set for an hour where Al would come in and we'd do Neil Diamond songs. So I learned a lot of Neil's repertoire back when I was a young kid, and I grew to love those songs so much that anytime I sit at a piano to play a piano bar or entertain, I always go back to those Neil Diamond songs because A, they're classics.
Yep.
And B, I learned them so well because we played them every night. So boy, it was like going to Al brought me to school. That was a really good education.
Amazing. So what else would you like to say? If you could say anything to Al Bruno on this dedication podcast to him, what would you like to say? I know you've already said a lot, but what did he really mean to you and his influence on you today? I mean, look how you have just blossomed. Look what you're doing now. You're in Nashville. You work with Montgomery Gentry's band. Incredible.
I think all of us can trace our journeys back to the start, you know, back when inspiration struck. And for me, my whole life, ever since I've been 17 years old, I've made a living by being in a band. And I learned how to be in a band with Al and the guys back starting in 82. So it was a positive experience as I got being in his band and his, you call it tutelage, where, you know, he would show us the ropes and, you know, here's how you get paid from a club owner and here's how you structure your sets. And most importantly, here's how you entertain people. Mm-hmm. So he's always willing to share that throughout his life. And look at him now. He's still out singing his heart out for local people.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's a legend. He's an institution up there. And it's really rare that someone can stay in the business that long and still be that draw and still be that wonderful person that he is. He's got a heart of gold. He's never met a stranger. And he's just a great entertainer and even better friend. And I owe a lot of where I am because he gave a kid a shot. So thanks, Brother Al. Love you, buddy.
That's a good way to start this. We are talking to the legendary Al Bruno, and I'm really excited to be able to finally talk to you. You know, I've lived in this area for 40 years, and I remember seeing your name all over the place. So I know you've been playing out for 40 years. I can attest to that.
well, let's say I watched you grow up. and grow into what you do for a living and what you aspire at, and I've known your name for a long time.
Same here.
And I say, you know, so you've been around.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, yes, but I don't want to talk about me. I want to talk about you. I want to find out.
All right, go ahead.
I want to find out first your background. You're originally from Troy?
Yes, I am. I'm born and raised in Troy, New York.
Right.
Down around the Market Square and you know, St. Mary's Church, all those areas, on a place called Heverman's Avenue. And it was, you know, it was a great growing up, great, incredible, you know. And I had, let's say back in that time, I had all the wise guys and my mentors around us that were uncles and aunts and everyone else that helped you learn about respect in life and what life is. And, you know, going after what you want to do in your life, you know, rather than crossing the track, going to the wrong side, they kept you on the right side, you know, so
yep.
That was important, you know.
And I'm sure music kept you on the right side, right? Who was there a teacher that inspired you?
You know, here's the best way I could say it. I remember being that little Italian guy in school, in a Catholic school, and they were doing a St. Patrick's play, and they chose me to do an Irish lullaby, and I went, oh, my God. And so at that time, you know, Elvis was breaking and all that stuff. I'm going, oh, my God. So it's like, tura-lura-lura, tura-lura-lai. And I can remember that till this day because my grandmother, who raised me, and my mother were sitting in the front rows, and I walk up to the front of the stage, and the piano player starts, and I started singing it, and I could see all the people, and I was like, oh, my God, I was petrified. And in the middle of the song, I forgot one word, and I went, oops, I made a mistake. And I said that, and then I continued the song. Well, then there was an applaud.
Right.
And when the applause was there, I looked, and I went, oh, God, I love this.
Mm.
And so I would spend my life just walking around the city and walking through alleys and everywhere else, just singing my brains out and knowing what I wanted, but that wasn't a job. So they wanted you to have a job. So I went and did many things. I toiled at many jobs. I was a truck driver. Are you kidding? I mean, I was a truck driver, my first job out of school for a long time, you know, and, you know, that type of thing.
Well, so, look at Jim Croce. He wrote a lot of songs as a truck driver.
There you go.
Right?
There you go. You see what I mean? So it,
exactly.
You do detour from what your love and passion is because you need to make a living and you think you're building a life. But, you know, some life is too short not to fulfill your dreams and destiny of what you really want to aspire at and try. Yeah, so go and do it. You can always get the job later on. So that's all, you know. And jobs come and go. What am I going to say, you know, as far as this is what life is, you know.
Now, why do I think that, didn't you have a career at one point as a hairstylist?
I knew that was coming. I was waiting for that.
No, I do happen to remember that, but I don't know why.
Rich, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I ran over to Price Chopper earlier,
right,
and getting some odds and ends for me and my daughter. And then I was walking down the aisle, and the woman stopped me and just went, oh, my God, I miss you so much. The greatest hairdresser that ever happened. And I looked and I went, oh, wow. I says, you're talking a long time ago. She said, I came to your salons constantly. You were the best. And we started talking and reminiscing, but I was lucky. I always had that art because, you know, it's born within you to have these artistic feelings about doing things.
Right.
And she said, you were the best. And I said, well, my salons were the pilot of, there was no such thing as blow drying. There was no such thing as, quick styling or gels or anything. It was all the beginning right there. And I was lucky because I worked and did things where Vidal Sassoon, Paul Mitchell, all of us traveled in the same pack. And I went from state to state and I taught holistic medicine and permanent waving and coloring. And I taught that coast to coast.
No kidding.
Out Redding, California, and in San Diego. I've been everywhere. And it was just a quick moving time in my life.
Right.
And, you know, and the good part was this was all new innovative technology that was beginning to make the hairdressing industry what it is today. Now it's out of whack, but it, you know, it was the beginning time. And I remember teaching classes of how to blow dry hair, you know, and all that. And in the 80s, I mean, the 70s were like the hottest times for permanent waving.
Right.
Matter of fact, your mentors of life, people like Rick Mitchell and all them,
Sure.
They used to come to my salon to get permanent waves.
Is that right?
So that they'd have curly hair. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was called a Jerry curl back in those days, and everybody had to have a Jerry curl, you know. And but they would always hear me singing behind the chair or that or that.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Did you sing? Did you sing in the salons?
I did. Oh, yeah. I would always try to make a good time out of these things, you know. And,
sure.
And my stylist and everybody that worked in my salons had the greatest of times. They really did. I remember doing something, and my partner had said to me, every time you do a song at a trade show, when we go to trade shows, they say, get Bruno off there to sing a song. We need to kill some time, and and the audience is waiting for him. And I'd say, all right, so I get up there and do something. And then I was inspired more so by the movie Beauty School Dropout.
Right.
Grease.
Sure.
I created that at the Coliseum of the Starlight Theater and had sold tickets to people that wanted to go to the show. And I made it a hair show and entertainment all in one. And they packed the place with 3,000 people.
Jeez.
And I remember coming down the aisle starting that song in a white tuxedo and all that jazz and models all over the place. It was a phenomenal time. It really was. And that went on for a long time, to be honest with you. Distributorships, I helped them all. I helped them all conquer their millions and their business. But then my partner knew that, God have mercy on him, he didn't live very long. He was a great guy. And he said, if I ever had the ambition you have to live life, man, I'd do it. If I'd go do it. And I said, well, I'm going to do it. And I literally stopped doing what I did and walked around the corner and started a band and a new career.
You're listening to the Top Talent Podcast with a legend in the Albany area, a great entertainer, and guy with a real interesting story, Al Bruno. Let's continue. So how did you connect with, sorry to interrupt you, but how did Neil Diamond enter the picture? Because I always associate you with Neil Diamond.
That's true. And you know something? This is a classic part of everything.
Yeah.
That we were doing an oldie show, and the oldie show was, Johnny B. Goode,
right.
Kansas City, mm-hmm. you know, and Johnny Cash, et cetera, et cetera. And we were doing all that, and everything was good, and we were becoming recognized real quick. And then we were doing a wedding one day, and the bride, I guess, wanted this one particular song that we just never knew and didn't even rehearse it. And the guitar player went, you got to do this song, man. She needs this song. And I said, what? And they said, Sweet Caroline. And I said, Sweet Caroline, how does that go? And he goes, are you kidding? I said, no, I don't know. And he starts playing it on guitar, and I went, oh my God, that thing? She wants that? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, whatever. I says, we'll pull it off. So they write it down on a sheet of paper and what have you, and we get up there, and I gotta try to find a way to get through it. I swear to you, Richie Phillips, are you ready?
I'm ready.
It was like I began to sing it, got halfway into it, and I went, oh, my God. I didn't even have to look at the sheet. I didn't have to do nothing. It all came to me. I had a feeling with it, and I went, guys, I got the answer. From that moment, we went into hard rehearsal, and we started to do nothing but Neil Diamond songs.
Wow.
All right? And, I mean, the band worked hard at it, and Eddie Kilgallen, who was the musical director at the time, and he was only 17 when I hired him, and yeah, I had to sign papers to bring him into a bar because he was only 17. I was like, look at this, you know. And but all the guys were so into that Sweet Caroline, Cracklin' Rosie, Shiloh. We put it down to such a show that I got a phone call from the Starlight to open up for Dionne Warwick.
Wow.
And or Bob Newhart, one or the other. I can't remember exactly which one it was.
I would have taken either one.
Oh, yeah. But I went, oh, wow. So anyway, as the band grew on, the certain members dropped out. This one made changes. I still kept in contact where musicians knew that I had the bulk of things going on that were different. Mm-hmm. But every time I hired somebody, musicians, they would go, "Oh my God, he plays that ridiculous music. Are you kidding me?" Hmm. Now, the thing was, they were making more money than they ever made.
Right.
And they would go, "Wow, this is good." All right. So, and nobody really understood that it was a show context, what we did. So when I opened up for Dionne Warwick, it was phenomenal. We absolutely rocked the house. Everybody was in awe. Like, wow, you don't hear this kind of music, whatever, because it was all Neil Diamond and Neil Diamond songs that you would never hear on a radio.
Right.
Okay. So from that point, it just kept growing. I get a call for the Bob Newhart show, and it goes on. And then, I mean, every artist you could think of, I opened up for at the Starlight. And Bob Belver and I had a good relationship with that, you know. And that's where the Neil Diamond thing came from. It put a trademark on top of me where automatically they go, "Oh, my God." Well, I will tell you this. I'm not an ego character. I'm just who I am. But I know that when I portray that and do that song, it's something that comes from the heart. It's not emulation. I'm not imitating. I'm not trying to be him.
Right.
I never wanted to be more than Al Bruno and everybody's friend and what have you. That's me.
That's nice. You weren't trying to capitalize on him necessarily. You're doing it for...
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know a lot of people in this industry, and there was a young lady who now aspires at wanting to be a singer and an actress. God love her. She went on to do her thing. And I was doing a television show at the Crossgates Mall or someplace live with a 21-piece orchestra.
Wow.
And I said, "Okay, well, we're gonna do this." And even though the orchestra played the song in the wrong key because they couldn't change it, and I went, "Okay, whatever." Ooh. I mean, what are you gonna do? You're on TV.
That's tough.
So the interviewer, who you know as Benita Zahn.
Yes, absolutely know her.
See, and now I was her hairdresser also.
Is that right?
When she came to this area. Yeah, I mean, as far as like taking the job, all that. And we were friends for a long time, but she interviewed me and she said in the interview, and she never knew how that struck me because I always tried to do an interview with her years ago, you know, just about a lifestyle.
Right.
And, you know, as far as I wanted her and I to get together, we never did, but someday we will. But anyway, she said to me during the interview about my vocals and how much I've done and my new album and so forth. And she said, "But I got to ask you a question." I said, "What's the question?" She said, "Does it bother you that you're riding on somebody else's hotel?"
Right.
And I went, "What?" And she said, "Well, because everybody associates you with Neil Diamond." And I went, "No," I says, I was lucky enough that that was the vocals and that was the style. So I've been very fortunate or I wouldn't be here with the orchestra. I really didn't know what to say, Richie.
Yeah.
I really didn't.
Kind of throws you.
It kind of made me think for a second.
Right.
She doesn't know that that actually was a changing point where I stood there and went, "Okay, I also I have to do other things and what have you that I want, because I know how perfected I have the Neil Diamond sound just born within me. I don't have to try. I don't care what song it is, you know, it just happens." But then I began to do a lot of other things that people began to notice me even more so.
For example,
you'll never know that. I mean, that was that statement, and it still lives in my mind.
Right.
Okay. So,
that you had to expand a little bit. Right.
Oh my God. But that was another great moment that, as far as learning, you're learning each time. But you know something? You asked me about coaches and all that. I did have there was a show before you were born.
Go on about that.
Anyway, you were just a child, but there was a thing called Teenage Barn that was on television, and all these kids would sing and play instruments and so forth.
This is a local show? You're talking about a local show?
Yeah, it was Channel 6.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? No, see, and, before and my
I
time
was just
here.
A child. I was just a kid. Huh. And, you know, and we all knew about Teenage Barn, they called it. If you look it up somewhere, I know it's on YouTube or someplace. But anyway, the vocal coach went on to teach all these kids and all that stuff. And then she opened up her own studio. Well, later on, I found out that all the singers in the area and musicians were taking lessons from her. Hmm. And I got to meet her later in life. And she just figured I'm just another guy who wants to sing or whatever. Right. So, and the funny part is when I went down and auditioned to take classes from her, she was kind of in awe and go, oh, my God, you have so much to work with. And I went, I don't know. I want that answer. And she goes, you do. And so we became friends and my teacher and my mentor. The sad part of the whole thing, when I decided to, you know, grab a hold of the horns and become that entertainer, she had passed away.
Oh.
She never saw me on stage.
That's tough.
But I will tell you this, whenever things are tough, whenever things are down, and vocally I think I'm going to have a tough time, I will always say, Dottie, are you still around me? I need your help. And the tricks that she taught me and the things she taught me about vocalizing and singing proper, where to place your voice, no different than you being on radio. You have to know where to place your voice at all given times.
Yep.
It's a lost art. I've helped a lot of singers right now, you know. But, you know, that's it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Well, actually, you brought up a good point about, it was one of my questions. What do you think is the secret of morphing from a singer, of which you are, to an entertainer, of which I really consider you? Like, I watch your videos. And I say that because I've seen so many people on stage, you know, so many country acts, I'll say, in the 30 years I was on radio.
Yep.
You have, like, here's an example. George Strait would just stand on the stage. He doesn't move. He stands there with a guitar. He just plays a guitar, and the girls scream like he's one of the Beatles. I've never seen anything like it. And then you have Keith Urban, who's the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. He's all over the stage, and he's a great entertainer. And they're both, I would consider them both entertainers, but what is that secret sauce that makes them both entertainers? Now, I consider you more of the Keith Urban variety in that you're all over the stage. You work the crowd.
Thank you.
You know, you're very interactive with the crowd.
Well, you know something? It's like George Strait, I think, is the most mesmerizing, incredible artist vocally when he's delivering his songs.
Right.
He makes a different kind of love to the people because his stories that he's telling and delivering the vocals, it's just so intense. You're wrapped up in it.
Right.
And he doesn't need it. He's a character that doesn't have to make that move, okay? Mm-hmm. He can be very subtle about it, and he's not in any way gonna make you feel uncomfortable or anything. He's gonna try to embrace you by delivering the story of that song.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, it's all in the music with him. You really have to listen.
It's all in the music. Right. I mean, God, he's got such great things. As a matter of fact, before we get on to the next thing, Eddie Kilgallen wrote a number one for him.
That's right. One
up all night. Yeah.
Up all night. One night at a time.
Yeah. Oh my God. God bless him. That was phenomenal. But then you go to the other gentleman that works the crowd, the entertainer, who has a different way to hold on and to grab everyone as an individual.
Right.
And that's basically where my life is, where I don't care what it is. I could be up against the toughest crowd. I'm going to find a way to connect with each one individually. Entertainers are not around that much anymore. You know, I'm glad you brought that up because they're not. They're all singers. You ever notice everybody's a singer and a screamer?
Exactly. They're not working the crowd.
Think about it. In other words, if I decide to take a different route in life and I scream at the end of the song or somewhere in the song, everybody will think I'm fabulous and scream. I don't get it, but that's me. I, I love like the days of Whitney Houston and all that stuff, and at all that kind of delivery. But you know something, the vocalizing was so incredible. It's a topic all by itself. So, as an entertainer,
yeah,
you know, that's what I see. Go ahead.
Do you think that the crowd's behavior has changed over the years? Do you think that people, I don't want to sound like an old guy. You think the young kids today aren't paying it, are harder, harder to play to?
Love that. That was good. I love the way you said it. Go ahead.
No, I don't want to be that guy, but you know, like sometimes I do a lot of weddings and private parties and stuff, and I do notice a lot of times that, well, this is my take on it. I find that they're a lot more specific on the music that they want. Like they'll just give me like a playlist. They'll say, just play these songs in this order. I want to say to them, well, you could just have an iPod and that'll play all night. You don't want anybody to entertain the group. And they'll say, nope, I don't want you to say anything. Just play the songs. So I see that a lot. Do you see that? Well, I don't know if you do a lot of weddings and private
parties. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, do you?
Oh, my God. And some. And, you know, sometimes you stand there and you go, you're making me feel useless. I can't.
Right.
I want to be me and I want to entertain the crowd. I want them all to be happy. Not just you or a selected few. And it has to be the mass crowd when you're doing a wedding or private event and the bar scenes like I do. It has to be about everybody, all right?
Exactly.
And what happens is because of the technology of your phone and having every song on your phone,
they all
like what they hear. They love a song and they go, Al, can you play that song? Take care of it. It's a terrible song. You know, it really shouldn't be played. And they go, well, no, everybody will go wild. I says, I'll tell you what, I'll make a 10-to-1 bet on that. And you know something? I'll play it and everybody leaves the dance floor.
That's right.
And the guy or the girl goes, what are these people, brain dead? And I, no. The fact of the matter is, what you play in your car and what you play in your headbuds or earbuds is two different things because
exactly.
You love it.
Exactly.
Okay? So it has nothing to do about the mass crowd. And when you're doing a wedding or you're doing you're entertaining anywhere, what I learned as a little kid, my grandmother would take me to the park and buy a bag of peanuts and I would feed pigeons. She'd teach me how to feed the pigeons. And she'd say, if you feed them right, they will come to you all the time. Well, when I do what I do in my life, it's almost like feeding the pigeons.
Yeah. And you've learned
how. I make sure I give them all what they want.
That's right. Well, that's it.
That's the theory
of radio. You know, a lot of people always say, why do you play the same songs over and over and over? Well, it's because they study these songs. You know, when I was on, this is amazing. This is a true story. I did that show, the country radio, for 30 years. And every morning for, I'm not kidding, 20 of the 30 years, every single morning at the same time, they played Mountain Music by Alabama. Oh, play me, you know, they played that song. And we had a consultant come in and I finally asked him, what is it about that song that we play that every single day? And then I found out, I tried it at a wedding. I just put the song on and even people that hate country will stand up and dance to that song. They study these things.
You own them. Yeah, you own them from that point.
Yeah.
Yep.
There are these songs that work.
That's the magic.
That's right.
Yeah, the magic of that one song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's incredible.
You know, it's funny how you say that because here I'm going to give you something that happens. I don't know if you've ever been to Peddlers or anything of that sort where I am now, but it's been so incredible. But anyway, I would say to them when I started that gig, I would say, listen, there's one song going to be an opening song every night and it's going to set the pace and the bartenders know enough that get ready. And turn off the house music, et cetera. All right. And Midnight Train.
Midnight Train to Georgia?
No. Yeah. Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Yeah. Gladys Knight and Pips. And you open with that song?
I would put that on, and everyone in the place will be like into it.
And the other song, that always works, is Sweet Caroline.
Listen, Rich, you ready?
Yeah.
The sad thing about Sweet Caroline, all right, when my band, the Blue Light Special, when we were doing that type of thing. We started at the wedding. Then from there, we started to fall into doing all the Neil Diamond stuff. they would wait for that song. But as far as like other bands would think I'm hokey because I was playing Sweet Caroline, had nothing, had no dance rhythm, no nothing. But now it's a trademark song all over the world.
Yeah.
You know,
well, with baseball.
It's just amazing.
With the Red Sox and everything too, right?
Yeah. So, and it is a fun song in every which way.
Oh,
every
absolutely.
Which way, you know, so.
Now, speaking of fun songs here, because we really haven't debuted your song, and we don't want to play too much of it, I guess, but you have your own original song that you're working on, right? Or is it done, but we're just going to play a portion?
No, it's not done yet, because I have to do one more trip to Nashville, but...
explain how you got involved with this.
It was Eddie Kilgallen, all right? Like I say, he never forgot where he came from, and that's what I love about him. And he's a great guy.
Great guy.
And I gave him the start in his business, and he's traveled the world 10 times over. And he'll always say, always because of I took the chance on this 17-year-old kid. And so when he wrote this, he came back to visit and came to see me perform and all that stuff. And he walked in and he was inspired by the thought, I guess, when he left. Like, oh, my God. He was telling the story to Montgomery Gentry. Like, oh, my God, I've been drunk there before. And it hit him that he went home. And 4 days later, he says, I got a song for you.
Huh.
And I wrote it for you. It's about you and your world. And I don't want anybody else to record it. And I think it's a blockbuster song. But,
it really is. You do a great job.
And I love them. And you're actually, there's very few people that I would, you know, have them listen, what have you. And at this point, till everything is finished. But I thank you for writing back to me and saying, by the way, it's a great song. You know, that's really good. Yeah.
But, let's play a little bit of your song here, though.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that. And, see what kind of comments you get on
sure.
it. How's that?
All right, here we go. So the name of the song is I've Been Drunk Here Before.
Just another local watering hole, couple miles off the four-lane road. Don't walk in if you ain't planning on staying. The whiskey's flowing and the music's playing. The barmaid is gonna break your heart. Take your money if you wanna throw a dart. Yeah, that's my kind of crowd. A little loose, a little loud.
There it is. I've been drunk here before.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Clever. Very clever.
You know, the tough part, Richie Phillips, I will tell you this. You walk outside your backyard, you're a legend and a monster in other areas. When you're in your backyard, sometimes they just say, oh, yeah, that's Al. He does that song, and that's it. So there's where it's sometimes harder to get radio stations or somebody like my first album. The only guy that ever played it on radio, I think, was Rick Mitchell. Hmm. All right. And he was so gracious to interview me with the new album and so forth. And other than that, well, yeah, that's Al. He's from Troy and all that. And they just let it go.
Wait a second, Al. Hold on a second. We got a call coming in. God, this is the second time we've been interrupted. Who could this be?
Hey, you guys talking about me?
Wait a minute. Who is this?
Rick Mitchell.
You got to be kidding me. Are you calling from Florida? Is that where you are?
Anything to salute Al Bruno.
Oh, my God. This is perfect. This is perfect. Your ears are ringing, Rick.
They certainly were. That's the reason I picked up and called. And let me tell you something about Al Bruno. He is the consummate entertainer, performer. He loves his audience, and the audience loves him. Look at how many people follow him all around. Track season, this season, the dead of winter. They're all there. An amazing guy.
Amazing.
And I still remember when he told me this is what he wanted to do. And he was a hairdresser. He had his own place.
That's right.
And I remember saying, Al, I hope you make it. And sure enough, he and I became friends over the years, and he made it. He made it.
I think he told me he did your hair.
Yes, he used to perm my hair back when men getting perms was back in the 70s. I can't believe I'm admitting to that, but yeah, that's true.
I don't know about you, but if he permed my hair, it would only take about 5 seconds. There's nothing
left.
Well,
yeah, the rollers, he wouldn't be using that many rollers anymore. But that was back in the day when I had the big afro and
that's
everything
else. Now, he did mention that it was really difficult for him to get any of his songs on the radio, any kind of airplay whatsoever, except for one person, you.
Yeah. You know, we would have him appear on the show. He would sing one of his songs, one of his recordings, and then he'd do some of the Neil Diamond sound-alike stuff mm-hmm. that he's so well known for.
Right.
And when we would have remote broadcasts where we'd have people come out for like breakfast for $1.98 or something when I was at WTRY.
That's right.
He'd come out and he'd sing for the crowd. He would do it for nothing.
I know.
And I mean, all I had to do was pick up the phone and say, Al, I got a chance. I'm there.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what he'd say.
A consummate performer. A consummate. If you
yep.
if you look on YouTube, he has about 150 videos of him through the years. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. So,
yeah, and back when he used to appear with the Blue Light Special, a lot yes. of people remember him from the Colony Coliseum. When he would appear there, he'd open up for all these major acts. I mean, it's been an amazing career.
It's an amazing career, and it hasn't stopped for him. So,
nope.
To sum it up, what does he mean? You already explained what he means to you, but...
Let me tell you. I'm going to give you just a quick story. I flew up to the Capital Region about maybe 9 months, a year ago, and I called him up with no prep at all. I said, Al, I'm in town. Let's get together. Sure enough, we went out to Bubbles in Mechanicville.
Right.
We had a great dinner together. We must have talked for two and a half hours. And it was like, you know, we just picked up where we left off last time. So he and I have become really good friends.
That's great. And in the meantime, you are down in, the biggest community, adult community in the world, the Villages.
It's growing so fast. It's amazing. But you know what? You live in your own little village. And, you know, I do a lot of events here. I host a lot of parties and I do music bingo. I mean, all this other stuff that really catches senior citizens' minds.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love it here. I do miss the Capital Region and the changing of the seasons and this and that. So I try to get up there a couple times a year.
Do you? Oh, great.
All right.
All right. Rick Mitchell, ladies and gentlemen, and a tribute again to the great Al Bruno. Thank you for calling in.
All right, Richie, thank you for asking me, because I'd do anything for Al. He's a great guy.
And by the way, my podcast is called Top Talent, and I did a little segment like Top Talent Radio Personalities. I'd love to have you on.
Oh, I'd love to do it. It's been, you know, 8 years, and when I go up to the Capital Region, I can't believe they built an Exit 3. We used to joke on the air.
That's right.
Exit 3 would take you to the town of B-Built, because it always said exit 3 to B-Built.
That's right.
You know? Now it's built.
That's right. Goes right to the international airport that they call.
Yeah. Hey, don't you remember going to the airport and walking on the tarmac?
That's right. Thank you, Rick. Thanks for calling.
All right. All right, Richard.
Oh, my God. You just made me think of something. I used to do a radio show in the 1970s with Bill Miller. All right, a talk back show.
Really?
It just came to me on WGY.
You're kidding
me. Oh, my
me.
God. Oh, my God. Oh, every Wednesday night with Al Bruno. Oh, my God.
Do you have any tapes of that? Are there any recordings of that anywhere?
You know something? I think there's some recordings on cassette tape. You know what a cassette tape is?
Sure. Of course I do. I know what an 8-track is. Are you kidding me?
There you go. I love it. I got a whole box of them. Yes, there is a couple of cassette recordings I got packed away someplace. And
wow.
It was just phenomenal. People would call up and talk to me and all that. And actually, Bill Miller, God bless him, he said, the most fun I have is when you're here, because other than that, I'm sitting in this dark room by myself. But being an entertainer, you are in a different way of life, you know, and that's sure. really what you have to be. And like when I'm, whatever I'm up against, and I mean, I did two tailgate Super Bowls in my life, and I was very fortunate. First one was in San Diego. The other one was on the Intrepid ship in New York City.
Yeah, you told me about that. That's great.
And right across the street from where I was performing was J-Lo, all right, at that time, okay? And she was performing across the street from the Intrepid ship, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is pretty cool. There was 4,000 people on the Intrepid ship, and I was with Boomer Esiason and Ray Rice, and Boomer was the MC, and I was the star of the show. How's that one?
Wow. You know, and I'm like, your resume.
Let me tell you. It's like these things move so quickly through your life. There's so much written in my mind about the journey, you know, and things of that sort. And that's really what it is, and TV programs, et cetera. And by the way, my band was the orchestra for the cerebral palsy telethons.
Yes, of course. Yeah, oh, that's, yes, I remember that. That.
You were probably a kid at that time, yeah. You know, and that was a great thing. I worked with J.P. Morgan and all the people from Days of Our Lives, and they were so great. We had such great times. We really did, you know. So there's very few of them I haven't worked with. You know what I mean? So I was lucky.
I think I saw the J.P. Morgan one. You have a lot of videos on YouTube. There must be like 150 videos on there.
I have young people that tell me that say to me, oh, the other night we went on YouTube, we watched all your videos.
Yeah.
Man, what a journey. And I say, yeah, you know, something, it really was. And there'll probably be more that people are finding as the years go on. Who knows, you know, but it's amazing. It is amazing. I wish they had that when I first started. There would have been so much of it collected by now, but
right.
Most of it is a great memory, and I can't complain, you know. Yeah. So,
well, you've done so much, and tell everybody where you're playing now. You're at for the people in the Capital Region.
Peddlers every Peddlers? Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. Oh wow, gotta get up there.
And Clifton Park. Yep, a great place. I mean, I don't know if you ever eaten there or what.
Yes,
great food, great staff. And then I do other places, you know, during the week. I'm also now. Here's a place you probably were before. Rafferty's.
I know you mentioned they've kind of revived that, right?
Rafferty's? Yeah, yeah. It used to be the Down Under, then it became J.K. Yeah. Rafferty's, and so now what they're doing is kind of reinventing the moment. And they've been asking me for a year to go down and do it, and I said when the time is right. I didn't want to go in the dead of the winter.
Yeah,
but
right.
It's kind of like the prelude. I'm building it up so that people get used to it. That Thursday night, okay, Al Bruno's at Rafferty's. So, you know, you build your crowd so that they're more comfortable about, they'll know so-and-so stops there, so-and-so stops there. So now the crowd begins to build. And that's really what business is all about. I will tell every business owner, listen, each business, no matter what it is, I don't care if it's radio, television, or any place that you got as a business, it needs to have its own personality.
That's right.
And somebody has to define that personality for you. And that's really what I'm looking at. I'm saying, okay, I got to find a way to give this place a new personality. And it's getting there, it's little by little. And by summertime, it will be. It'll rock the block, you know. So
I was going to ask, you know, if Al Bruno is ever going to slow down, but it sounds like you're speeding up. It sounds like you're doing more.
Listen,
amazing.
There's a lot of people in cemeteries that slowed down. You know, I look at it this way, and I talk to a lot of guys that have been in this business forever, and I've done shows on the road where comedians would be like 80 years old, and they're so full of life. And I go, wow, nothing, you're not stopping. They go, Al, you can't. When you love people, it's a disease, and it's what keeps you alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, something, I think if I were to take a year off or 2 years, I would probably not be here. I wouldn't be talking to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was almost like when they said I had 5 bypasses done. I don't know if you know that.
Yes, but I was going to bring that up. I didn't know if you wanted me to bring that up. Yeah, you had.
But no, no. And it, to me, it's like whatever God's plan was, I went through that. And 2.5 days later, I was on my couch after the surgery. The surgeon was a master, was phenomenal, and said, listen, I just gave you 25 more years. So go home, rest, get some rest, get off all the drugs and everything, and stay with the vitamins. And he had a different approach to it. And you know something? I love the guy. I respect him beyond the dream. And he says, when I went back for my checkup, he goes, listen, you don't want to see me, and I don't want to see you for 25. He says, go live your life. Don't fear anything, which I know you won't, and just enjoy life. And you know something? I tell anybody who's been through this, don't wimp around. Don't walk around like, oh, do I feel something? There is nothing to feel.
But that's singing, for a lot of people don't understand, singing is very, very, it's a physical exercise to sing.
Oh, my God.
Did you feel, do you feel you have more energy now? Or do you still get winded from doing it? Or did it change your singing?
I would say that for a while I had to change my pace a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then I found, okay, if I give in too much, I'm not going to get back to where I want to be.
Right.
And now I find myself, okay, just doing what I do and being the way I am. And the energy level is building more and more and more. And your breathing capacity, you know, most vocalists, people that know what they're doing, I don't care if it's going back to the golden days of Tom Jones's and the best of all would be Johnny Mathis and
right.
Paul Anka, you know, go back to the classic right. guys. A lot of vocalists do not understand that if 98% of your vocalizing, your performance on stage, if you're an energetic person, you're all over the place, it is all diaphragmic control, 100%. And it's almost like a thing of like Houdini, where a guy can walk up and punch him in the stomach and he wouldn't feel nothing, because it's always a mass hard rock, because you're holding all your air in there and you're breathing diaphragmically, all right? And everything stays solid. But you let that go, and the next thing you know, you can't get that energy. You can scream, but you won't get the control that you need. So that's what I've learned about it, you know, and I'm all over the place when I'm on stage anyway. So that's the way I live the moment, you know, so
you keep going.
But my coming back to being me, I think 5 weeks to 6 weeks later, I was back on stage and people said, that's impossible. And there are some people who will actually say, are you back to singing yet? And I'm going, what are you talking about? You know? And one guy walked up and said, oh my God, I thought you died a year ago. You were in the hospital. And I said, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. But at least they're talking about me. What do you want from me? You know?
Yeah,
so,
I saw it all over Facebook at the time. Yeah, they were spreading all kinds of rumors. Well, you fooled them, and I'm glad you did.
Well, God had a plan. That's all I know. That's it. But, you know. So,
well, Al Bruno, I really appreciate you calling in. This has been great. I everybody's got to go out and buy this song when it's done, right? You're going to have an album. Yeah. Are you going to do a whole album?
There'll be two particular songs we're going to release now.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll just continue the project. That's all we're going to do, you know. But because of the download sales of the world, the way things go now.
Right.
So you can release those two songs, put them on iTunes, wherever you want, and that's how it all works now. You know, it's the real money maker and survival is, once it's established, you get the calls to do a concert here, a concert there, an opening here, whatever it may be. That's where the revenue really comes from, unless you had a million seller. You know what I mean? Like, why can't every day be like Christmas? You know what I mean? You need one of those, and then you'll be rich the rest of your life.
A Sweet Caroline. Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Caroline. There you go.
Exactly.
You know? Oh, my God.
Or Midnight Train to Georgia.
I'm telling you. Well, Either way, you know, you got your plan. You know exactly what you're doing when you're out there doing your thing. And I kind of come up with my formula. And that, I think that's what an artist needs. He needs to find his formula.
Exactly.
Because if you look in everybody else's backyard, you only confuse yourself.
That's right.
So you need to put the right plants in your backyard. And the next thing you know, people will be talking about you and hiring you.
That's
there
it.
You go.
That's it.
You
know, that's it. The secret sauce.
Yep. But, you know, that's it. But as far as the way the world is going now, you know, singers and so forth, I always say everybody's a singer. Everybody, you know. And you see that every place you go, you know. And 40 years ago, if you put a mic in front of somebody, they run the other way.
That's right.
Now they take the mic away from you.
That's right.
So that's it.
You know, I was going to say one other thing. You were talking about a person who was like 80 years old who just keeps going with music. And I have to tell you a story. I've been playing some senior centers once in a while, and I played in a place here in Clifton Park. I don't know if you've ever played there. My father-in-law, who's 91 years old, he was there, and I played there. A guy came up, and he said, "Do you mind if I play the violin?" And I said, "Sure." And he got up and he's playing the violin. I have a video of him. He's playing. He's doing like a country, that kind of a thing. And he was good, you know. And right at the end of that, again, he was standing up very straight and full head of hair and everything. And when he was done, the woman who was running the event said, "Okay, we have to sing happy birthday to this gentleman." I said, "Okay." And so she starts singing. She, "Happy birthday to you. Happy 100th birthday to you." I said,
"Oh my God."
I said, "Back up for a second." I stopped her. I said, "He is 100 years old? You wouldn't, Al, you wouldn't believe it." I couldn't get over it.
There you go.
There you go.
See what I mean? So there's what doing what you love is what really keeps you going forever.
That's right.
And, you know, and he's probably there for other reasons, but look at that. He was probably like 16 years old in his mind when he was doing that. You know what I mean? It takes you back. It makes you feel good. It gives you that energy, you know. But
what was interesting about it is he told me that he didn't take up the violin until he was 70.
Wow.
He was a guitar player before that. And then he said, "I think I can do the violin." It's fascinating. Ooh. It really is.
Well,
the power of music.
Music has its own remedy. I don't need a prescription.
That's right.
Just give me a song that I could fall in love with.
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, kid.
Thank you so much.
Be good.
You too.
And I will see you somewhere. All right.
Yeah. I got to come out and see you.
All right. Sounds like a deal. All right.
Thank you.
Be good. All right.
You too.
All right. I'll catch you later. Be good. Bye.
There he goes. That was great. Really. Again, a true legend in the area. I'm sure every area in America has their own local legend, and he's ours. Definitely. I'd like to end this podcast with something I always do on every podcast. I always have a talent quote and an intro to go with it.
The top talent quote.
Thank you, cheap, underpaid jingle singers. This quote came from, I don't know. It doesn't say. I guess it's anonymous. But I like it. It says, "When I stand before God, whatever God you believe in, at the end of my life, I'm going to hope that I would not have a single bit of talent left, and I could say that I used every single thing you gave me." I love that. I hope you use everything that whoever you believe in gave you, and don't waste your talent. Pursue it. Embrace it. Get everybody out there to appreciate it, and they won't appreciate it unless you show it. And that concludes this episode of
Top Talent.